the ability to increase is proof that a thing is still imperfect. The good, in every instance, is subject to these same laws. The advantage of the state and that of the individual are yoked together. Indeed, it is as impossible to separate them as to separate the commendable from the desirable. Therefore, virtues are mutually equal, and so are the works of virtue, and all men who are so fortunate as to possess these virtues. But, since the virtues of plants and of animals are perishable, they are also frail and fleeting and uncertain. They spring up, and they sink down again. And for this reason, they are not rated at the same value. But to human virtues, only one rule applies. For right reason is single and of but one kind. Nothing is more divine than the divine, or more heavenly than the heavenly. Mortal things decay, fall, are worn out, grow up, are exhausted, and replenished. Hence, in their case, in view of the uncertainty of their lot, there is inequality. But of things divine, the nature is one. Reason, however, is nothing else than a portion of the divine spirit set in a human body. If reason is divine, and the good in no case lacks reason, then the good in every case is divine. And, furthermore, there is no distinction between things divine. Hence there is none between goods either. Therefore, it follows that joy and a brave, unyielding endurance of torture are equal goods. For in both there is the same greatness of soul, relaxed and cheerful in the one case, in the other, combative and braced for action. What? Do you not think that the virtue of him who bravely storms the enemy's stronghold is equal to that of him who endures a siege with the utmost patience? Great is Scipio when he invests Numantia and constrains and compels the hands of an enemy whom he could not conquer to resort to their own destruction. Great also are the souls of the defenders, men who know that as long as the path to death lies open, the blockade is not complete. Men who breathe their last in the arms of liberty. In like manner, the other virtues are also equal as compared with one another. Tranquility, simplicity, generosity, constancy, equanimity, endurance. For underlying them all is a single virtue, that which renders the soul straight and unswerving. What then, you say? Is there no difference between joy and unyielding endurance of pain? None at all, as regards the virtues themselves. Very great, however, in the circumstances in which either of these two virtues is displayed. In the one case, there is a natural relaxation and loosening of the soul. In the other, there is an unnatural pain. Hence, these circumstances, between which a great distinction can be drawn, belong to the category of indifferent things, but the virtue shown in each case is equal. Virtue is not changed by the matter with which it deals. If the matter is hard and stubborn, it does not make the virtue worse. If pleasant and joyous, it does not make it better. Therefore, virtue necessarily remains equal. For, in each case, what is done with equal uprightness, with equal wisdom, and with equal honor. Hence, the states of goodness involved are equal, and it is impossible for a man to transcend these states of goodness by conducting himself better, either the one man in his joy, or the other amid his suffering. And two goods, neither of which can possibly be better, are equal. For if things which are extrinsic to virtue can either diminish or increase virtue, then that which is honorable ceases to be the only good. If you grant this, honor has wholly perished. And why? Let me tell you. It is because no act is honorable that is done by an unwilling agent that is compulsory. Every honorable act is voluntary, alloy it with reluctance, complaints, cowardice, or fear, and it loses its best characteristic, self-approval. That which is not free cannot be honorable, for fear means slavery. The honorable is wholly free from anxiety and is calm. If it ever objects, laments, or regards anything as an evil, it becomes subject to disturbance and begins to flounder about amid great confusion. For on one side, the semblance of right calls to it. On the other, the suspicion of evil drags it back. Therefore, when a man is about to do something honorable, he should not regard any obstacles as evils, even though he regard them as inconvenient, but he should will to do the deed and do it willingly. For every honorable act is done without commands or compulsion. It is unalloyed and contains no admixture of evil. I know what you may reply to me at this point. Are you trying to make us believe that it does not matter whether a man feels joy, or whether he lies upon the rack and tires out his torturer? I might say in answer, Epicurus also maintains that the wise man, though he is being burned in the bull of Phalaris, will cry out, 'Tis pleasant, and concerns me not at all. Why need you wonder, if I maintain that he who reclines at a banquet, and the victim who stoutly withstands torture, possess equal goods, when Epicurus maintains a thing that is harder to believe, namely, that it is pleasant to be roasted in this way. But the reply which I do make is that there is great difference between joy and pain. If I am asked to choose, I shall seek the former and avoid the latter. The former is according to nature, the latter contrary to it. So long as they are rated by this standard, there is a great gulf between. But when it comes to a question of the virtue involved, the virtue in each case is the same, whether it comes through joy or through sorrow. Vexation and pain